spiritual bypassing the pain and like not feeling it and kind of trying to separate yourself from something that's unprocessed.
You cannot bypass anything. What are you going to do? If your partner died and you have pain about it, you can either let yourself feel it and then it heals, or you can do something in order to avoid feeling it, what you call bypassing. But then what happens? Pain is still there.
Welcome to the Kanagara Journeys podcast, deep thinking, inner work, and conversations that matter.
So, yeah, I was taking this conflict of Israel and Palestine as an example. I was wondering, because what we see is that people all over the world identify with either one of those two sides. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit about identification, where it comes from, and why we are doing it.
Well, identification is a result of a personal family history or collective history. So that means identification happens out of an unresolved bonding issue or an unresolved trauma. So what happens sometimes if somebody in your family experienced a trauma in the past, then people from later generations, because of bonding, they identify with their person's situation or experiences. And because of that identification, they act out the feelings of that person in their own life. And then anything that happens in the real life, they use that to act out the feelings that they still carry for somebody from a former generation. So this kind of things is very common. So we basically act out the feelings of others in present life. That's also how old unresolved conflicts keep on reappearing, because of bonding, because we identified with people from our family, our culture, or our religion, who suffered some atrocities or traumas in the past. And because of that identification, we recreate the same situation again, in a way, unconsciously. Means if you identify with someone who, from your family, who was forever, whatever reasons, was killed, and for religious reason or so, you identified with that, you seek often revenge. And by seeking your revenge, you need to project that on something, on some conflict. So you act out as wanting revenge in your present life. So you recreate, in that sense, the same conflict again. And that is the reason why such conflicts often don't stop. They keep on repeating themselves. And the reason is bonding. We bond with somebody and we take revenge for somebody without having the experience ourselves. You can see this even now, you know. We are not suffering the war, but we identify and we carry the anger for people who may suffer the war. So we take it on our shoulders, something that actually is not part of our life. So this is all bonding. It happens unconsciously. And this is what people do all the time. So they bond for religious reasons with Palestinians or with Israelis or with somebody else. And then you recreate the same conflict. And this is how wars and conflicts keep on being repeated. So bonding is a difficult force. It's a terrible force that doesn't allow you to find peace, or creates war, basically. So the learning is how to help yourself to come out from bonding, which is very difficult for people, because when we come out of bonding, what we experience, we feel ourselves alone. We don't belong anywhere. So the need to belong somewhere is why we bond. You know, I'm an Israeli, or I'm a Palestinian, or I'm an Indian, or I'm this or that. That gives you a sense of belonging somewhere. And this is often not so consciously that we do this, you know. But even, you know, when you watch yourself in simple examples, you know, let's say you are not interested really in football, but you watch a football game where your country plays with another country. Very often, on a subtle level, we still want our team to win. No? What is that? It is bonding. Everybody is very influenced by it. And they see bonding is always in the way of peace. So in order to find peace, you need to move out of bonding. And then, of course, the peace has to be found on an individual level, personal level. It's not about peace, bringing peace to the world. The world will be always in conflict because the world is always unconscious. So the idea to bring peace to the world is a social approach. It's not a spiritual approach. A spiritual approach is to find peace yourself. So to find peace inside yourself, you know. Because I don't think we will ever experience in our lifetime that Israelis and Palestinians will be in peace. It's unlikely the way it looks. So, but you can make peace inside yourself. That is a personal achievement. And that is something different. And that's actually what, in my view, spirituality means, to make peace in yourself. That means you don't take any side. Somebody said beautifully, I'm not on either side, I'm on the side of love. That's right. You don't not on either side. The moment you're on one side, you're part of the conflict. It doesn't matter on which side you are. The moment you are on one side, you're part of the conflict and you're part of the problem. And you will recreate problems in your surrounding. No? And you can see that when people identify with one side, they get angry when somebody is on the other side. So they create the conflict again in their own life. So that is the problem. To live life without taking sides is not too easy. It's very difficult for people. Even in others, not only in wars. And you remember even on the corona crisis, my God, unbelievable. People who were pro and anti-vaccine, they became enemies. They were fighting on social medias like crazy. And they are called meditators. There's nothing to do with meditation. It means you're part of duality. You want to be right and the others are wrong. And why? Because you identify with some idea and that it has a personal reason behind that. Means something in your life is unresolved. That's why you identify. That's why you seek situations where you can follow one ideology.
The work basically always starts with oneself.
Always, sure. You can see this, and I also talked about it. There are people who fight for peace. What are they doing? They create war, obviously.
And how about, I know you talked about not polarizing and being on one side or the other. Like, I have, say, Palestinian friends that are in a lot of anguish right now about the situation. And they do identify or bond because of what's happening to them.
Sure.
So isn't that bonding kind of natural? And
yeah, it is natural. I'm not saying it is not natural. It is natural. But it is being part of suffering. No? Of course, when a group suffers very long and very strong, like the Palestinians and in the past, the Jews.
Yeah.
That's why both Palestinians and Jews both have a very strong bonding. That's why you cannot solve this problem. Because both have a very strong bonding to their identity, feeling Jews and feeling Palestinians. And when people are in as part of a small group, and this group suffered a lot in the past, then the bonding is very strong, exceptionally strong. Because bonding is a survival response of our body and mind. Means when I'm part of a small group and this group is attacked, the tendency is to bond very strong because it's a survival impulse. When we stick together, we can survive. And if you could feel yourself a little less Palestinian or a little less Jew, then it would be better, no? Because you will not have to suffer together with them and you will not be bond with them. But it is often very difficult for people to do because they immediately feel guilty. If you're not feel yourself as a Jew or a Palestinian, even you're born there and you just enjoy your life and you know your people fighting and get killed, you feel so guilty you cannot do it. So the guilt prevents you from separating yourself. And this is very difficult to tolerate. So happiness in general, in other situations also, that is an extreme of in other situations also. We are suffering because we cannot tolerate a guilty feeling like a child. If your mother is suffering and you are happy, the child cannot tolerate it because the child feels, I'm not my mother's child. I'm not I should suffer also. When the child also suffers, then there's no guilty feeling. If this child enjoys, there's a guilty feeling. So guilty feelings come together with enjoyment. If you have no guilty feeling, you're usually suffering. So in the beginning, it is like this. If you want to live a joyful life, you have to learn to tolerate the guilty feelings. That is challenging for people. For everybody, for us also. On a personal level, it is always challenging. No? And you can see in small children, even parents sometimes do that. They say to their child, look, you make your mother unhappy. And then look what happens in the child. The child feels very guilty and stops himself from doing that. This is how guilt is created by parents. And the child cannot understand that nobody can make anybody else unhappy. It is everybody's personal doing. So neither can you make somebody happy or you can make somebody unhappy. This is very individual, personal. But children don't understand it, and most adults also don't understand it. They think they can make somebody happy. And this is just not possible in the nature of things. But this is running our life so much. No? So it's not easy to move out of that. It needs a lot of consciousness, conscious awareness to move beyond that. And in the beginning, it means tolerating guilty feelings.
And taking that a bit further, it means also, I guess, to, if you stop bonding and you accept this guilty feeling, it's also meaning that like you start individuating and walking your own path.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what development is. The development, spiritual development, means moving into aloneness. So an enlightened person is the most alone person. And that's what people don't want. They won't always be part of a group, of a crowd, everybody. And that is not spiritual development. I want to be part of the good people. I want to be part of my family. I want to be part of my religious group, of my country. It doesn't matter really what it is. You want to be part of something. And not to be part of something is very difficult. Even you want to be part of a spiritual group. I become a sannyasin, I become part of that. Same. An enlightened person is not part of anything. Even Osho said that once. He said, I have nothing to do with your commune. That's what it is.
Can I ask something about what you said about something in the past generations you act out that in your life? Is that family constellation work?
Well, family constellation work shows you the bonding, and it shows you with whom you identify, and it shows you that. It's a mirror. It shows you with whom you identified, because often these things are unconscious. You're often not aware that you're acting out not what you really want to do, but you're acting out somebody else's feelings. So constellation work brings this to light. It shows you that. That is the first step. First, the bonding has to be revealed. It means you bring life to what you do. You're not choosing a work because you feel this is my work. Very often not. You choose a certain work because you're bonded with somebody in the past. And that's why you choose that work. And you think you choose it because you want it. So family constellation brings unconscious bonding to light. That is the first step. And then the moment you agree, you say yes to that and understand that. Then sometimes it takes you also beyond that. Awareness always takes you beyond. So if you want to transcend something, you actually don't need to do anything. You just have to bring light and awareness and an acceptance to what you're doing. That is transcendence. When you want to transcend something, you cannot, because you become repressive. So transcendence happens when you live out something and you do something consciously. And after a while, you cannot do it anymore. If you're conscious that you burn your hands if you touch the stove, the hot stove, you cannot do it again. But if you're not conscious and you do something else and you don't notice the burning of your fingers, then you do it again and again. So consciousness is needed. Awareness of what you're doing. Awareness of your bonding. Awareness how you create suffering for yourself. You know, when you identify with somebody in a war, they are suffering, but you create suffering for yourself. So actually your suffering is not needed. Their suffering is existential because they live in a place where they are attacked and there's war, and this comes from existence. It's an existential, you know, nobody can change it. You can say they shouldn't be attacked. Sure, you can say that, but what does it do? It is just a happening. So it is a life movement, really. So there's suffering that comes because existence, let's say, comes as a destiny because it happens. And then there is suffering that we create ourselves. So one has to always look, is it a suffering that is part of existence? When I live in a certain place and there's an earthquake, that's what it is. But is my suffering existential or is my suffering my own creation? That's important.
And can that be also like some sort of comfort zone in the suffering that I feel?
What?
Can that suffering, if it's not existential, can that be also coming out of a comfort zone because I feel comfortable?
You feel comfortable if you suffer with your mother. Your mother is sad and you also said you feel good. You feel I'm a good child. I'm my mother's child. You feel intrinsically good. That's why people who feel good often suffer. You know, if you want to be good, you usually means you're going to suffer. It's a wrong goal. Wanting to be good is always a wrong goal. Wanting to be a good person, a good citizen, a good student, a good therapist, a good partner, always a wrong goal. And it always leads to suffering. The right goal is be conscious. That is something totally different. Wanting to be good relates to values, what I should do or should not do. Being conscious does not relate to values. So when I want to be good, it relates to some values that I carry in me, how I should behave. And that always leads to suffering. And it always comes out of unconscious bonding.
And in a way, I guess this unconscious bonding is that also how we basically carry on the conditioning of the past, society, everything.
That's right. That's what I just said. You recreate. And the funny thing is people use also spiritual methods. For example, people use family constellation. And with family constellation, they recreate suffering. So it's not that the method is important. The important part is with what consciousness you use a method. So, you know, it's very simple. You know, conditioning is religious conditioning or social conditioning is you should respect your father. No? That is conditioning. You should follow your father and respect your father and your mother. Now you can use constellation work also like this. You teach people you should respect your mother and father. You bow down to them. Then you are in the service of conditioning. You do the same thing as the whole society does. So easily you can use a method in a wrong way. Any method. The method is neutral. It is just a method, you know, it's just a technique. It's like a plumber has tools. And you can use your hammer in a creative way and it helps, or you can use it in a destructive way. It is neutral. It depends on the person who is using the tool, not the tool itself. And family constellation is exactly like this also. It's a tool. Now it depends how you use it. And I have seen constellators doing terrible things, disturbing people so much unnecessarily.
What is the difference between, you mentioned about if you separate yourself from the bonding and then you feel guilty, how is that different to, say, like just spiritual bypassing the pain and like not feeling it and kind of trying to separate yourself from something that's unprocessed?
Well, basically the point is you cannot bypass anything. What are you going to do? If your partner died, and you have pain about it, you can either let yourself feel it and then it heals, or you can do something in order to avoid feeling it, what you call bypassing, but then what happens? Pain is still there. The pain is there inside you. It is repressed, but there's nothing to bypass. You cannot bypass it. In fact, you cannot bypass anything. So that's when one understands that, then one gives up doing this, you know. That's why people who meditate in order to avoid their pain, they have pain. It's just like that. So it cannot be, nothing can be bypassed, really. It is just that you trying to avoid feeling it. But if you try to avoid feeling in a way, you feel it still somewhere. So in other words, Washu said that once, nothing can be avoided. You cannot avoid anything. So if you understand this, then you start relaxing. If I can't avoid anyway, then why not feel it now? So it's absurd. So if you really understand this, then you will be with whatever comes.
A lot of Osho's work or his meditations, or at least some of them, are about catharsis and about like expressing what is not there. And in context of what you just said, how are we like feeling or expressing what is there in environment where it is difficult? For example, when I'm in a work environment, in an office, and I feel triggered.
Well, one has to understand that it is not just like this, that either I repress or I express. That is a simplification. You can feel something without expressing it. Then you're not repressing. So you can feel an anger in yourself, allow yourself to feel it, and it doesn't mean you have to scream at somebody. That's the difference, no? So I can feel my anger. I'm not repressing it because I'm feeling it. When I repress it, I don't feel it. So I'm allowing myself to feel my anger, but it doesn't mean I have to scream. I have the choice. I can scream. I cannot scream. That's right. So I'm not forced into a reaction. When I'm forced into something, then I'm really not in control of myself. And I'm a victim to something that drives me. That has to be understood. It's quite different. So when I'm angry with my boss, I can feel, is it appropriate to say something about it? Is it not appropriate? Does it help? Or does it change anything? Or I'm just feeling it and then I learn something by myself like this? That was, Osho talked about Gurdjieff. That was the message he got from his father. His father told him, when you're angry, don't do anything, wait for 24 hours. And after 24 hours, you do whatever you want. That's it. So it means you just wait. You don't move into an unconscious thing. You just wait before and then feel it. And then you see what you want to do afterwards. Then this is when we usually don't do this in life.
And these methods then, for example, like dynamic meditation or cathartic methods, they are used as a tool to learn to be with that emotion.
Active meditation or cathartic meditation is a contradiction as such, because meditation means not doing anything. It means relaxation. Dynamic meditation means doing a lot, because you have to breathe, you have to move your body, you have to be total. So you have to do a lot. And at the same time, you have to not do anything. So in the East, this is called a koan. A koan is a puzzle without any solution. So active meditation is that. So a koan is given by a master to a disciple to work with it. And by dealing with it, you move beyond the mind eventually, because the mind knows either I don't do anything or I do a lot. The mind cannot do these two things at the same time. That is the koan. Either you push yourself or you don't do anything. And that's what people do in dynamic. Either they push themselves or they take it very easy. In both situations, nothing happens. You miss the point. In both cases, you miss the point. The point is, it is a koan. You have to give your energy into it and at the same time be relaxed. Now, how to bring these two things together? That is the koan in dynamic meditation. And you cannot think about it. That's why you have to enter the meditation and experience it. Then you will feel one time you push yourself, another time you don't do enough, you do too little. In both situations. So this is the work, no? And then Osho talked about this also. He said there is something which they call in sport, people experience that. They call it the second wind. That means you run, runners have that. You run and you feel I can't run anymore. And then they continue running. And suddenly they find themselves in a space where they can run forever. And they are totally relaxed and they are doing something a lot. So then they entered that space, and that is a meditative state. And you do something, and at the same time, you're not doing something. And this is actually the space I think we're looking for in dynamic. So you do something, you do a lot, but you're looking for the space where something happens by itself. So if you don't do anything, that doesn't happen. So you need to do something, and but you're looking for the space where something happens by itself. And sometimes people experience that in active meditation. They move their body and suddenly they feel something takes over them. And then something, they don't do it, but something happens. This is the space. Something takes over you. But it happens, you cannot create that, you know, when it is more happening. Suddenly it happens, sometimes it happens, and sometimes, well, it doesn't happen. So that's why meditation is not something you can do. You can do an exercise, but that exercise is not meditation. So dynamic meditation is not meditation, it's an exercise. So you do an exercise, and then sometimes a meditative state happens to you. So in a way, you cannot say, I do meditation, because meditation is not something you can do, just like love or gratitude or many these kind of things. You cannot do them. You can put yourself in situations where something like this may happen to you. And then it's real. So meditation is something like this. Love also.
You talk a bit more about gratitude, actually, because I feel like quite grateful many times, but I have the feeling that the gratitude you are referring to might be like a deeper concept than that, or maybe not.
Of course, we sometimes have a taste of gratitude, but sometimes our gratitude is also pleasing. So you say thank you to somebody because you want to be nice. That is obviously a different gratitude that I was just mentioning about. Real gratitude is when something overwhelms you and it's not your doing. But to say to somebody, thank you, of course you can say that and you can do that. And maybe there's also something true in it. I don't know. It can be. But often it is also a social thing. No? Like we say, good morning and thank you. Then this is, of course, this is a pleasing. You want to be nice. It's also okay, you know, but it's a social conformity. That's what we do in a social setting. And of course, there's a different kind of gratitude, which has nothing to do with that.
Can I ask a question about something that came up for me, which is like some of the work that we choose? You meant it could be like a compensation for something. So how do you have any thoughts on how to find work that is maybe not a compensation for something that's unresolved?
You will need to look at an example, but compensation is also related with not really wanting to feel something. So we compensate means because what the feeling that or the state we are in is there, we don't like it or we feel it is unpleasant, so we compensate it by something else. No? If you feel, for example, if you feel very needy, you start being very giving. That is compensation, because feeling needy is unpleasant. Feeling giving, everybody appreciates, and you everybody will say to you, oh, you're such a nice person, you're a giver. If you feel needy, nobody will say that. So feeling needy is unpleasant, so you become a giver. That is a compensation. That's what many people do. They're always giving, and actually the reality is they are needy. So the giving is a compensation.
So what would be the solution to that, for example?
There is no solution. Just allow yourself to feel the neediness. Be needy and relax with it. Yes, what else can I do? Right now I feel needy. Maybe I didn't get something from my mother when I was a child. And right now I'm still feeling that missing. So I help myself to be with that feeling. I don't avoid it. I allow this needy feeling to come up in me. And then, yeah. And then I see what I can do to be with that. Maybe I do a meditation or I do something. I don't know. I go for a walk and I feel my neediness. And then nothing's wrong with it. I don't allow anybody to judge it. And I don't judge it myself. That will be good help also. I remember when I did my first group, when somebody would call you needy, that was such a shame. And if I would have been a little more conscious that time, I would say, yes, I'm needy and you are also, everybody's. What's wrong with it? But of course, at that time, I didn't have that awareness, so I was really ashamed when somebody would call me needy. This is one of the big condemnators in groups. What was at that time when somebody called somebody else in the group, you're needy? That was such a big condemnation. And some schools still do this. Needy is not allowed. Of course, there is other kind of love. which is not a needing love, but it arises only if you allow yourself always to be where you are. In this moment, I'm needy. And then if the moment you relax with that, at some point, some other kind of love arises, which doesn't come out of need.
Sure.
But as I said before, you cannot create that. But we're all pretending, you know, that is the problem. Everybody is pretending how great he is. And nobody is really very great. Osho said, your reality is you are ugly because the ego is always ugly. And the moment you have an ego, you cannot be so beautiful. That is everybody's reality.
Is that, so to say, real self-love, actually, to allow myself to feel and be whatever is there, however I am in the moment?
I think so, yes. I think so. You say yes to yourself. And in family constellation, that's why it's connected. We learn to say yes to our parents as they are. The moment you can say yes to your parents as they are, you can say yes to yourself. These two things happen at the same time. So in family constellation, we learn to say yes to how my mother is and to how my father is. And in the moment I can do that, I can say yes to myself. In other work, you can also approach it from the other angle. If you can say yes to yourself, how you are, you will become capable of saying yes to your parents as they are. That is approaching it from the other angle. But you have to remember, it always happens at the same time. You cannot say, I say yes to myself, but I hate my mother. That is unreal. That is impossible. That's what people do. I love myself, but I hate my mother. You're saying something that is impossible to do. You cannot do these two things at the same time. But we are so out of touch with that. That's why people do something like this. And they're not checking that what they're saying is unreal. And many people say, I love myself, and I do something out of love for myself. And it is just talk.
And so Gito, is a final question, and to wrap it up, I know you teach a lot of different techniques and tools, and also in the context of what we talked about, is the essence of your teaching to be aware?
Well, the main thing for me is meditation and love. So in that sense, it's not really a teaching, because what I'm teaching sometimes, of course, as I'm therapy techniques or some meditation techniques. But what I'm really interested is meditation and love. And I learned this, for example, from my master, from Osho. I learned it a lot from Mira also about love. So it's my personal inquiry. What is meditation, the space of meditation, and what is love? So I'm learning this by myself. So it is not really a teaching as such. It is an inquiry. It is an inquiry in a group where we work with people and we inquire in together into understanding what is love about, what is meditation about, what is consciousness and what is love. So we are creating a space where we make an inquiry into the nature of what that is. So I'm also part of that. That means I'm also, while we do this, I'm also learning in each group, in each session. I'm also learning something. So it's my inquiry and it's my interest. And then I do this together with people in a group also. And then everybody can sometimes give a feedback or give a hand to somebody else. Yeah, sometimes somebody learns something from you, and sometimes you learn something from somebody. It's more like this. The rest is just, whether it is family constellation or in a man or woman work or breath work or counseling work, it doesn't really matter so much. This is just the outer frame of that.
Well, thank you, Sogito.
Yeah,
nice talking to you guys. Thank you also.
Lovely. Yeah.
Thank you for listening. If this podcast has sparked a flame in you, I encourage you to take the first step and join our community at kanagarajourneys.com, where you can access our free masterclasses, journals, and podcast episodes. Also, I invite you to share this podcast with a friend or on social media if you feel it can make a difference. I invite storytellers, experts, activists, and changemakers to bring tools and insights and to share their secrets. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode.